Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a brief but annoying message to let you know that you could have first heard this episode 9 months ago if you were a subscriber to our Iron Filing Society Patreon offering.
For the price of a pint and a St. Clement's each month, you can get up to 4 episodes a week, 9 months before the rest of the world gets them. Early access to regular episodes, lots of other marvellous benefits, and there's absolutely no adverts or brief but annoying messages like this that will get right on your tics.
Find out more and subscribe now at tftimemachine.com/ironfilings.
Here we go. Here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go. This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I am Andy Dawson. Pow, pow, pow.
I'm Sam Delaney. So what?
Welcome along to Life Logistics. We're here to help. Send us your questions, your worries, your wars, your issues, and we will do our very best to put you back on the right track in life and make everything okay again. Very quickly, Sam, Gareth Wilson says, I occasionally wear a Danger Mouse t-shirt. I am 41 years old. Am I a cunt? What do you think?
Nah, you're not a cunt, mate. no way. I mean, nah. Up to a point, my attitude is like, you know, live and let live when it comes to t-shirts, as long as it's not racist. I've got a t-shirt story actually about inappropriate t-shirts that I've never told publicly before, but I think I'm gonna. And if you think it's too inappropriate, then it's up to you to edit it out. Right, it's about a sad incident, right, that everyone will be aware of, a tragedy that I, in a small way, you know, played a part in covering in the media, which was the Grenfell Tower tragedy, which is horrible. And I was presenting a radio show at the time, and I don't live far from Grenfell, and it's very much in the heart of an area that I've spent a lot of my life growing up in, so I called my producer, who's also from West London. We both felt quite strong that we wanted to go down and do the show live from the scene. Mm-hmm. And sort of, you know. And so we told the station that we're going to take our kit down there and just find a spot. And I was at home and he was at the radio station. And we said we'd just meet there. And when we got there, I mean, it was like, obviously it was pretty tragic, very tragic. And there was a atmosphere of grief and chaos, and when he arrived with an assistant producer, and they arrived in a taxi because they'd been in a hurry, and I saw the taxi arrive and the assistant jumped out, the assistant producer, but my producer Mark stayed in the taxi, and I went, Why is he not coming out? And she said, oh, you'll see in a minute, just wait there, I've got to go get something for him from the shop. I thought, that's weird. And I went over to the taxi. I said, what are you fucking hiding inside this taxi for? Come on, mate, we got to get going. Well, he'd turned up to work that morning, unaware at this stage of the Grenfell tragedy, and certainly the fact that he was going to be going to Grenfell to cover it. And he was wearing a T-shirt that just said on it, get over it.
Oh, fuck.
Right? Oh. And so he'd realised this in the taxi on the way there, and he said, I don't want to be walking around and mix this tragedy with T-shirt saying, get over it, right? So he said to Tara, the assistant producer, who's gone, right, I'm going to stay in this taxi. Go out to one of those tourist shops. We're on Portobello Road, right? There's quite a lot of tourist shops. He goes, run across into those tourist shops, get me a T-shirt, any T-shirt. She went, oh, what one do you want? He said, I don't care. Just get me a T-shirt in my size, the cheapest one you can find, first one you can see, just grab it, because we're in a hurry, and I'll get changed to the cap. So I said, oh, good move, mate. You can't be walking around with a T-shirt that says, get over it. Well, they've only got tourist stuff in there, right? Including, like, a lot of Beatles paraphernalia. So she's only come back with a T-shirt that says, let it be.
Oh, fucking hell.
Which he did put on because he thought, well, we're in a hurry now and we can't keep white t-shirts, and it's certainly not as bad as over it.
Yeah, it's definitely
it's more philosophical.
Better. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Don't know if you're going to leave that in. It's just it's an ironic story. Yeah, it's an ironic story, and it's not making light of the day. It's just an ironic sort of like people wear T-shirts with slogans on. You don't know how they might come back and haunt you.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Going back to Mr. Danger Mouse, yes, fucking fine, mate.
It's. I mean, I'd need to see the T-shirt. Has it just got the Danger Mouse DM logo on? Just that? Yeah. Or has it got a big picture of Danger
Mouse
with Penfold standing next to him? Because, you know, I know which of those I'd wear.
Yeah, or Baron Greenback. I'd wear one with Baron Greenback on.
Just with Baron Greenback on, yeah.
Or my favourite, the geezer who was Danger Mouse's boss, who I think was a walrus.
Yeah, big mutton chops, didn't he?
Yeah.
That was a hell of a cast, that, the original Danger Mouse. You've got David Jason and you've got Terry Scott.
I know.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. In fact, mate, what I think we've arrived at is that not only are you not a cunt, you're a legend. So, well done on your Danger Mouse T-shirt. I'm going to get one too.
as soon as I take off this Get Over It T-shirt.
Yeah.
What else we got?
Let's have a look here. Me and my good wife are expecting our first child in December. A daughter, to be precise. As gentlemen who have both had daughters as their first children, what advice would you give? Well, I mean, we've been through this many times before. Forget what the gender of the baby is.
Yeah, I don't think there's any sort of like female-specific advice you can give, really.
No. Although I do think, I don't know, because my son is still only 8, nearly 9, and we're still sort of, you know, best pals. There was a point where my daughter probably reached 12, she's now 13. Mm. Or even 11, basically secondary school, where your relationship changes a lot. Like, she's far less tolerant of you as a human being and is much more, you know, there's a cooling of your relationship. But I don't know if that's specific to gender. I think they just become, they get to an age where they're like, listen, Dad.
I mean, I do a podcast.
Person.
I do a podcast with my son, Beans on Toast, and I started that, well, I could encourage them to start because I wanted to record me and him talking, basically, for when I'm older and for when he's older, if he wants to go back and listen to it. But I love doing it with him, but I kind of think there's going to be a point where he gets to maybe 14 and he's just going to be like, oh, Dad, you're so embarrassing. And, oh, I don't want to do a podcast. I don't want people to hear me and all this.
Yeah.
And it'll probably end, and I don't want it to end. But
it's quite heartbreaking,
no point wishing,
isn't it?
Wishing things like that away because if that comes, it'll come. But
it's heartbreaking parenthood in many ways.
The relationship with my daughter's still really good, but as long as I just don't see anything that might be vaguely offensive.
Yeah, and that's as we catalogued on this podcast, that's very difficult.
You don't know which how to you know.
You don't know where you're coming or going.
You don't know what the latest update or edict is about what's acceptable and what isn't, so you just got to
I mean, like, what about this whole J.K. Rowling thing? My daughter used to be all about J.K. Rowling.
I'm not even getting into that.
No, I don't understand it, so I don't want to talk about it, but I do know that she was really into J.K. Rowling, but now, if I mention J.K. Rowling, I'm almost like a criminal for saying her name. So, I don't fucking know what's going on there.
I don't know what they think about Danger Mouse.
Oh, I don't want
to
know.
To go back and watch that again and pre-vet it.
Oh, God almighty, don't... Yeah, I mean, imagine... I don't know what they'd make of Dick Turpin.
Oh,
they'd probably
exactly,
say
yeah.
that was sexist and misogynistic.
Yeah.
And they'd also say, why is the cast all white? And then I'd say, well, because in them days there weren't black people in this country, and then they'd, like, go off on me about that as if it was
I
my
fault. You'll find there were.
Yeah, there probably were. I mean,
they just
I don't
weren't
know.
Written into history because history was written by the white people.
Fuck,
anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, we're not saying for a minute that they're wrong. We're saying we're probably always in the wrong, but it's very confusing when you discover yourself to be in the wrong 90% of the time. It takes a lot of effort to start, you know, reassessing everything, you know, everything you know is wrong. You have to start again from year zero in your nut. Mm. And at our age, it's exhausting, but you got to do it, I suppose. You know,
5 years down the line, there's going to be stuff we've said in this podcast over the past 2.5 years that's just going to just haunt us or possibly lead us into some kind of prison sentence.
Yeah. I don't know,
but there you go.
We'll get cancelled. We'll get cancelled.
Getting back to the original question, I can't think of any female-specific advice. Basically, I've said before, when you've got a baby, you're in a state of emergency, and you just it's about living from day to day.
You're in a war footing.
A war footing, that's exactly it. You just got to get to the next point where you can get some sleep and then start again.
Be careful not to become an alcoholic all too easy when you've got babies around, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not just speaking from personal experience. I know so many blokes who've just, you know, like to drink. Yeah, like a drink. Like the odd, you know, line or whatever through their life. And then they think, when they get to fatherhood stage, you think, this will probably be the moment where I have an epiphany and I'll just become, like, really chilled and probably become a sort of bloke who has one glass of wine with his roast on a Sunday and never does drugs again. And that's what they think. And in fact, the reverse is true, mate. You think you got your worst days out of the way in your teens and 20s. Think again, dickhead, because you're so fucking exhausted, you're going to fucking bury yourself in drinking drugs. So watch out for that. Don't get complacent. But someone said to me, no, not someone said to me, it's a really famous quote, so they didn't say it to me.
Well, I mean, they did, but indirectly.
Yeah, I think someone told me this quote. It wasn't there.
Whoever did the quote didn't think I'm saying this to Sam Delaney. They thought I'm saying this to everyone.
But someone reported to me a quote. It was like, being a parent is like giving someone else a bit your heart to just walk around with.
Oh.
Right?
Beautiful.
I've not done it justice, so it's better than that. But I think the point is that what you care about most is your children. But your children just fucking grow up and live their own lives.
Yeah.
And are just bowling around. I mean, when they become adults or teenagers, they're bowling around all over the place. You haven't got a fucking clue where they are. But they're in charge of your heart.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing else is, only they are.
Exactly.
Fuck.
Yeah.
But that said, I mean, it is also a right laugh being a parent, so don't
sweat
them too much.
I've got the thing now. All this thing, people have gone off to university for the first time this week at the minute, and I'm now probably 2 years away from that. So I'm on a countdown to that heartache, knowing that my daughter will be going to university in a couple of years. Perhaps she'll stay local and still live here with me. Perhaps she'll go off to another town. And I'm like, there's no fucking way that can happen, because, hang on, she's just a baby. She's just a little baby still.
Yeah,
When did this become a thing where she's an adult person that can go and live in another city? I've never even gone and lived in another city.
For fuck's sake. I mean, it's fucking terrifying. When I went to university, we were talking about it yesterday, me and my mum, because my mum cried because I was the last. She lived in a quite small house with four sons.
Yeah.
And by the time I went to university, I was the last one living in the house. So she's suddenly like, fucking hell. She'd been a mum since she was like 21, right?
Anti-nest syndrome, innit? Yeah.
Big time. She didn't even have a husband, right?
Yeah.
And so she's like, fucking hell. So as I left, my dad had said he'd drive me down there, right? So he'd come around to pick me up from my mum's. And, you know, I'd loaded my stuff. You know, all my cool posters, my lava lamp, all my CDs.
Yeah, right? Of course.
Into the back of the car.
All your Britpop CDs.
My Britpop CDs, my trainers, my plants. And so for someone had bought me a plant to take and put in my dormitory. You know, a little cactus or something. Anyway.
Next to your bunk bed in the dormitory.
Yeah. My mum cried. Mm-hmm. And she was remembering that yesterday because I've had a niece just go off to university for the first time this week. And so we were talking about that and how that must be emotional for her parents, my brother and sister-in-law. And my mum said, yeah, remember when you went? And I said, well, it was worse for you because she was just fucking stuck here in this council house all on your Jack Jones with like no mates. Well, she had mates, but you know what I mean? The house just fucking empty. And she said, yeah, I cried. And I said, yeah, I remember that. And then I got in the car and I felt a bit upset. And my dad went, "What's the matter with you? You're driving me to university." So I said, "Well, Mum was just crying." And he just went, "Ha ha." Right? I went, "What?" He went, "Oh, don't worry about that. I mean, women, they just cry all the time for like no reason. It's not a big deal. You don't need to worry about that. I mean, she could be crying for anything."
Yeah.
And I thought, "Oh,
eventually,
yeah, this fucking,
she'll stop crying and everything will be all right again.
This fucking adds up. This is fucking explains a lot about the nature of your failed marriage." Marriages, because he'd already done another one by then. You're like, "Yeah, I mean, yeah, women cry. It's really weird. They're always like, the best thing to do is just ignore it. Get on with what you're doing.
Busy yourself somewhere else."
Yeah, they'll stop eventually, and then it'll all go back to normal again for a while.
Until the next time.
Until the next time. Fucking hell. Anyway, that's parenthood covered.
Yeah, from 1 to 18, yeah. Oh, God. Oh, I was going to read one there, but that's inappropriate. I won't read. Oh, this is a very unique one. Mm. We're not going to get another query like this, I don't think. This comes from a cunter who doesn't want to be named. And he says it's for sub judice and privacy reasons. He says,
"Oh, yeah.
A person known to me has an upcoming trial concerning the death of a man. And I'm wondering if you have any pointers on the etiquette of such situations." I mean, he said concerning the death of a man, but the title of his email is Murder Trial Etiquette.
Jalapeño.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Jalapeño.
This is a bit cosmosy, unless it's the same man we're talking about, but a guy who I, you know, not my mate, he's a friend of a friend. He's a local character, you might say, from the area I grew up in, and he's up for murder. And I found this out when I went There's a lot of murder about. I went to my brother's house in the countryside at the weekend because my brother, Castellani, QPR terrace legend, has moved to the countryside during lockdown.
Doesn't he? Yeah.
He's just like, "Ah, fuck this, I'm going out to the country. Fucking gather my thoughts a bit.
Can I become a country squire?"
He really has.
Covered in barber.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's... Both times I've been, he's fucking rocked out his front door in a pair of wellies. Don't know whether it's a breakdown or what. But in the field next to his house, there's fucking alpacas.
There's my field.
There's a field over there. It's not mine, but you can go in it. It belongs to no one. It's a common law field. Those alpacas are everyone's. They belong to the society.
If I decide to kill one and cook it, it's mine.
I had a little chat with an alpaca and with a Shetland pony.
Did you?
Alpacas are fucking friendly, mate. They're so friendly, it's unbelievable. They were on the other side of the field, and I leant over the fence and just called to them, "Oi!"
Yeah.
And they looked up and just wandered over. They were like, "All right."
Did you see the one that crushed up at the pitch in the non-league game the weekend?
Yeah.
Lovely stuff.
Fucking
more of that, please.
Well, alpacas, that's the way they roll.
Yeah.
They're just wandering, going, "All right, what's all this? What's all this? What's this ball you're kicking about? Can I have a go?
Can I have a look around?" Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I play?
Anyway, my brother said quite casually, I won't say the name of the bloke, but he said, "Oh, yeah, you know so-and-so, he's in Nick on remand for murder." And I was like, fucking hell. I don't think we were talking about it the other day, weren't we, about someone was called Andy Dawson and did some murders, but it wasn't you.
Yeah, and I just found out about it, quite recently.
I mean, there's a lot of murder in the ether, isn't there?
We're in quite murdery times, I think. Maybe we're all a bit desensitised because of everything, and there's a bit more murdering going on.
Oh, mate, I'm not going to be doing any murdering if I can help it.
I've got no plans to do any murders.
No.
Nah. Having said that, I weirdly reckon I could handle prison.
Do you? How would you approach it?
I'd be like quiet and keep my nose clean, work in the library.
Yeah.
Keep out of people's way.
Well, yeah, it might work, but you still might become a target.
Well, I mean, look at me. I mean, there's nothing about me that people are going to pick out, you know. I'm not going to stand out in the crowd. I'm not going to be a sex object in prison, put it that way, unless it's as the target of someone with very, very niche interests. So,
well, I'm past that phase. I used to worry a lot when I was young, when I was a younger man, that I would be a prime target to be a sex toy.
Too pretty for prison.
I was genuinely too pretty for prison for a long time, but now, I'm fine now. Anyway, I know what I'd do, because I would stand out because of my loud, obnoxious voice. People would think, he wants learning. Look at that fucking cheeky cunt. Thinks he's a funny man.
A pig or two.
He wants learning. So I, as soon as I got there, would join the Muslim Brotherhood.
Right.
Because then you're part of a group, and it'd be good for me because I think a lot of them are vegetarian and don't drink. So
I'm
already, like, lifestyle wise, I'm sort of bang suited to them.
Part Muslim already, yeah.
Yeah, and I'd go and join them because I think if you're part of a mob, you've got protection. So I'd just ingratiate myself to them straight away.
What do you think the procedure would be for joining the Muslims in prison? Is there a form to fill in? Is there an interview process?
Oi, lads. Interested in joining the Muslims? I'm already a vegetarian and don't drink.
Do you have a pamphlet I could peruse, perhaps, before I put my application in?
I ain't read the whole of the Quran, but I think I know the basics. Fire away. If you're going to do a pop quiz on it. I've seen
quite
all the praying
to go
now
away.
That's done.
Quite happy to go away for a week or two and swat up on it, and then maybe answer some questions.
Are you open to the idea of people learning on the job, so to speak? So you sign me in, I pay me subs, and then I sort of pick it up by shadowing some of you lot.
Some kind of mentor or buddy system. Do you have that?
Yeah, it'd have to be that. I read a book called A Bit of a Stretch. It was at the beginning of lockdown, and I actually... A fear of mine throughout most of my adult life has been going to prison for some reason or another. You know, I'll often have dreams that I've accidentally done someone in or something like that. I think it's quite common. And I do worry about going to prison sometimes. And so I read this book, Bit of a Stretch, which was by a guy, middle class guy, worked in television.
Oh, this is Chris Atkins, isn't it?
I used to
I used to know him on Twitter before he...
Really?
Inside. Yeah.
He went involved
some made a sort film, of, didn't he? It was a tax thing.
It was some sort of iffy tax situation, where he, you know, there was some sort of tax avoidance scheme involved with financing a film. And as I understand it, he was in it because he was a filmmaker, and independent filmmakers just want to get their films financed by hook or by crook. So some dodgy accountant finance people were like, "Yeah, we can do this. You just need to sign here." And he was like, yeah, fine. But what he didn't realise was he was sort of endorsing or complicit in a tax avoidance scheme. Fucker goes down to do a fucking stretch in a proper prison. That was what was really scary. He thought if you get done for something like that because you've accidentally fucking done something fraudulent, you're going to go to white collar prison. No, mate. He was in,
proper prison.
I think he was in Wandsworth with nutters. Proper, like, nutty Jesus. Criminals. And it weren't fun. I had to stop reading the book, actually, because it traumatised me a bit too much.
Fucking hell.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to say to this bloke.
Well, he's added some more questions. He says, should support be unstinting regardless of the verdict? Should it be conditional upon acquittal? Is it better to have no opinion while talking to other people about the case? The person involved has not pled guilty or admitted anything, instead saying they were pissed up at the time and in the midst of a blackout and have no memory of when the alleged incident occurred. Oh, Jesus.
Oh,
well, I mean, you know, you can sit on the fence, I reckon, until the verdict comes in.
I think it depends on the nature of your... I'd need to know more about nature of your relationship with the bloke. Yeah. I mean, right, if it's your best mate in the world, right, he's made a mistake whilst drunk, it's awful, it's not, that's not an excuse, but what is friendship about? It depends on the nature of your friendship. Really, a true friendship means that you stand by him and say, look, mate, whatever happens, I'll stand by you. And then the verdict comes in, they go, yeah, sorry, mate, we're doing you for murder. You don't go, sorry, I think it's almost borderline Lampardy to say, well, I was going to stand by you, but the jury's verdict means that my own moral code forbids me from continuing our friendship. Do you know what I mean?
You've committed arguably the most heinous crime imaginable.
You've taken another human being's life. That is not your right. Only God has that right. It's like, look, you'd have to say, if he was a really good mate, you'd have to say, look, mate, this is a nightmare. You've killed some cunt. I mean, fucking hell. But don't worry, I'll come visit you, mate.
Consider our friendship well and truly rescinded.
Yes.
Henceforth.
Official, you shall be here from my solicitor. The paperwork is all in order. Sign there, there, and there. And then our friendship will be ended forever.
Null and void. It will have my wax seal on it.
Yeah, it's not on, is it? I mean, obviously, it also depends on the nature of the murder, I suppose.
Yeah.
If it's a drunken fight. There's lots of variables. If it's a drunken fight gone wrong, that's one thing. But if he's just... You know, I don't know, taking a hammer and smashed a granny head in.
Or if you've done a Dennis Nielsen and boiled somebody's head in a pot.
I got drunk, I blacked out, and when I woke up, I chopped his head off and boiled it. You'd be like, mate, this is quite bad, and we're still mates, but we're not as good mates as we were. Yeah. I'm going to be slightly standoffish with you.
There'll be no Christmas cards.
Andy, have you ever had to... This is a life logistics, it hasn't been asked, but it will be really relevant to lots of people. I think we might have discussed it before, but have you ever had to consciously cancel a friendship?
Yeah, I did cancel a friendship once.
A proper friendship.
23. Well, it was kind of a It was kind of one of those ones where the other person was kind of around a lot, but wasn't really wanted. Do you know what I mean? The kind of a hanger on,
sort of thing to a group. Yeah,
and he kind of said, done a few things that had just not just pissed me off, but pissed off a few people in our friendship group.
Mm.
And then eventually just said, like, there was one incident, and I just said, nah, I don't think there's any point in
us continuing this,
staying in touch with me, because this is just like not fucking happening.
Did you honestly?
Why you can't do that?
Did you sack him from the group? Or did you just say me and you?
I didn't sack him from the group. It was just me and him. But like, kind of by nature's osmosis, social osmosis, if you like,
he faded away.
Yeah, but I don't see why. If you've got any toxic people in your life, don't feel bad about getting rid of them. Because if you were in a relationship with someone and it wasn't working out, you dump them. So I don't see why you can't do that as well with a person. I don't think you would do it with a really strong friendship. You try and work it out. Do you know what I mean?
If you can let them fizzle out. I had a friendship that...
Ghosting someone then.
For various reasons, I felt, probably about 5 years ago when I stopped drinking and all of that stuff, he was one of the people that I felt, you know, nah, this has run its course. I don't think it's healthy anymore.
Was he an enabler?
A bit. That was one of the things, but there was more to it than that as well. It wasn't just that. I also just, there were certain things I didn't take kindly to. I let it fizzle out. Do you know what I mean? I sort of ghosted him. And that was fine. And I think he probably got the message. Plus, on top of that, I think he probably thought, it's a good natural filter system when you get sober. Because the people who think to themselves, oh, he's a bit of a boring cunt now, they're the people that you want out of your life. So it's no problem. You don't need to go, I'm not boring, I'm still loads of fun, I've still got great banter, even though I don't get pissed up. Like, if that's what they want to think, you think, right, well, this is like natural selection, right?
Yeah, nature healing itself.
this is Darwinian. Good, yeah. He can fuck off. But now, years later, he sort of got back in touch quite persistently and is trying to rekindle the friendship that, for various reasons, I'm still kind of past in my life. And I am 45, and I pride myself usually on being quite direct about situations. I will, what's known as, I'm quite good at swallowing the frog, right?
Right.
Is that way of saying grasping the nettle, right? Yeah. Well, you just think, fuck it, I'm just going to go through this short-term discomfort or awkwardness in order to achieve a long-term gain. Mm. But in this case, I don't feel like the reasons I would have to give him would be quite personal and cutting, and I don't dislike the bloke enough to actually say, this is what I do not like about you, and that is why I don't want to be mates with you.
You're fired.
Let's just say it's someone who veers... The simplest way I can explain it is, it's someone who veers quite strongly into the 97%. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
In his opinions and conduct.
Yeah,
yeah. A 97%er. Yeah,
I think that's something that I've probably shied away from, a conflict and swallowing the frog in the past, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. Definitely go for that. But
I usually do it, but I just haven't been able to do it in this case. I'm still ghosting. We'll see how it turns out.
Yeah, but like I said, if anyone that's got anyone in their life who's properly toxic, fucking get rid of them. Whether it's a friend you've had for 35 years or whether it's just someone that is around at the time.
Whether it's someone
I know people who have like cut family members out of their lives.
Mm.
And parents.
That's tempting.
Because they've just been such a fucking toxic influence on them. So, you know.
Relatives can be the worst.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, sometimes you're like, friends. Fucking...
Can't pick your family.
Yeah, you can pick your friends. There's guilt associated with cutting out family.
Yeah.
It's a tough one. But going back to the murderer, it completely depends on the level of your friendship.
Yeah.
You need to assess it. Is this a top dollar mate or more a casual bloke mate?
Yeah.
Think of it that way. If he's top dollar, you've got to stick by him. Unless...
If he's been boiling ahead, then he's almost certainly a laddie.
If it was murder for pleasure, then I think, whoa, no, bit weird. But if it was banter that got out of hand and turned into a murder,
then
I think you don't forgive him. If it was a Bantz murder, you say to him, look, mate, what you did was wrong. We're still mates. I know how banter can get sometimes. and listen... You know, if you still need me, like in Goodfellas, to make sure there's money going to your wife while you're inside, I can do that.
I can do that, but that's all.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. It hasn't been a very funny episode, but I think we've...
Yeah, it's been quite bleak, really. Maybe it's because I've got a cold, I'm feeling a bit maudlin.
I think it's nice to go down this road once in a while. It's been good. Yeah. All right, thanks for listening, everyone. Keep your problems coming in. Try and keep them light. Yeah.
Murder and the heartbreak of parenting.
Ta-da.
Bye. Hey, with this sort of miserable content, we could probably get on BBC Sounds.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.